Let's get ready to rumble! In the red cape, hailing from Metropolis, the man of tomorrow, the man of steel, Superman! Faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings in a single bound, who can change the course of mighty rivers, bend steel with his bare hands, and who, disguised as Clark Kent, mild-mannered reporter for a great metropolitan newspaper, fights a never-ending battle for truth, justice, and the American way. And in the black cape and cowl from Gotham City, the Dark Knight detective, Batman! Witnessing his parents' murder when he was but a child, billionaire Bruce Wayne worked to hone his mind and body to perfection, and taking the guise of a creature of the night, fights an unending war against evil and crime in Gotham City, Batman! And soon, ladies and gentlemen, these two world's finest heroes will meet on the big screen in Batman vs. Superman. Here to hedge their bets and lay the odds are Mark Finn.
Yeah, too bad, Lois. It sure is a nice night for a murder or a fire or something.
Mickey Finn.
Why, yes, I have danced with the devil in the pale moonlight. Why do you ask?
Aaron DeRive.
Oh, Mr. Luthor, Mr. Luthor, do you want to see a long arm, Otis? No, Mr. Luthor.
And I am Joseph Fotinos. Welcome to the Lobot Lounge and the Gentleman Nerd Podcast. Yes, we're here on the cusp of the greatest superhero throwdown since, well, I don't know.
I don't know.
I mean, these are giants. These are huge, giant characters in the DC. Hey, just superheroes.
Yeah.
Just two giant superheroes for the first time ever sharing the same screen. They even, I'm reminded of Batman Batman Forever. I'm sorry, I know it's horrible.
Those movies don't exist.
But there was a mention when after Robin, Chris O'Donnell's Robin, was about to take off and be all sullen, and Bruce Wayne, Val Kilmer's Bruce Wayne, went up to him and said, you know, the circus is probably halfway to Metropolis by now. That was the only time that they actually kind of put them together same universe.
It's true.
That I can think
of. It's true.
Cinematic.
And of course there was that wonderful teaser on the terrible Will Smith version of I Am Legend. In the ruins of the city, there was a picture of the bat symbol superimposed over the Superman S.
That's right.
When my wife saw the original ad for Batman versus Superman, she's like, wait, it's real? That was years ago. Wait, what? Huh?
Well, yeah, well, arguably, I agree with Joseph. I mean, these two characters, these two very iconic superheroes, I think pretty much established what I would consider just the superhero mythology in the United States. I mean, these are the two original guys. These are the two originals, Batman, Superman. There is nobody, they're older ones, but they're not well known. There are more popular ones, but they're very, very new or recent, especially if you consider that these guys showed up in the 30s.
Well, yeah, there were the earliest versions of superheroes, what we think of as the proto-heroes, the pulp characters like Doc Savage and The Shadow. It wasn't really until 38 that you had this alchemy, this pulp character conceit, this kind of Doc Savage, Buck Rogers aesthetic sort of combined. Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster did not realize that they were breaking ground. I think they were trying to just get a paycheck, at least initially. You know, so this originally was done as a comic script. It got recut by National Periodicals into a comic book format because the two were kind of interchangeable at that time. We don't have time to get into the origins of Superman and Batman because there's actually tons of really good information online. And for those of you that don't know the actual origins from 1938 and 1939 for Batman, you should totally go look them up. Look up what the creators have gone through. It's a fascinating read, and there's a as ways to spend time on the internet go, you could do worse than disappearing down that rabbit hole for an hour.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
And in fact, just talking a little bit about that history, but leading to the modern, what we're talking about today, I would say that Max Fleischer's cartoons are the ones that set that sort of the standard look for what these worlds would look like, what the characters would look like. I mean, even years later, Paul Dini, when he was doing Batman the Animated Series, said, yeah. Oh, absolutely. We looked at those cartoons and said, yeah. We want Batman the Animated Series to look like that, to look like Max Fleischer. Mm-hmm. Max Fleischer had done them.
And they drew the animated Batman the Animated Series on black. They started with black, as opposed to most other animations where they started on white or clear. They drew Gotham City. They drew that world on a very dark palette. Which of course, as we all know, Batman the Animated Series was a huge hit, and of course, it's very influential, creating wonderful stories, beautiful written stories, and of course, a memorable character in the person of Harley Quinn, who was created specifically for the animated series as one of Joker's henchwomen or the henchmall, and just sort of took off from there. Now she's appearing in Suicide Squad on the big screen as a real person. Good heavens, there's an actual Harley Quinn movie coming out.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
It's very cool. And
I mentioned Paul Dini actually is Bruce Timm.
Bruce Timm was the artist. Yeah, it's worth mentioning. And now, of course, a lot of our listeners are very familiar with Batman and Superman. But for those who are not familiar with Superman and Batman, perhaps intimately, we should probably discuss. Let's call it the cultural value of Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, because she's going to figure into this movie as well, and so we might as well include them as a trinity. Because those three characters were the first major characters to be developed for national periodicals, which is, of course, DC Comics. They occupy a particular strata in pop culture zeitgeist, if you will. Joseph, do you want to start the discussion on that?
Yeah, I would love to, and I think that it's a very wonderfully put segue into that, Mark, because I do know I have some dear friends who they're excited, but they're not like, I could live without seeing this, and I'm like, no, you don't understand, this is huge. You have no concept of what you're talking about. No, but what I do want to say that the characters, the archetypal characters of Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman, as you mentioned, are incredibly valuable and important to our everyday life. When you say, this is a job for Superman, or you hear, up, up, and away, or any of these types of things, X-ray vision, super strength, he's my kryptonite, she's my kryptonite. Those sayings have entered into our pop culture based on some of these characters. Batman, I'll start, I'm going to go against the grain. Everyone's expecting me to go Superman since he's my absolute favorite superhero of all time. But I'm going to go with the Dark Knight Detective. I'm going to take Batman up and say, let's look at this guy. He's a human being. Terrible, terrible tragedy he witnessed as a boy. His parents brutally gunned down by a thug in the streets. He watched his parents bleed to death in the streets after being shot. And they devoted his life to fighting crime.
Oh, is that what happened? Because I'm not sure they've ever actually explored that in any of the movies.
Yes, I know. It's very old.
We're gonna see it yet again.
Actually, no, we shouldn't, because it's been,
over here,
he's worn the cape for 20 years in this one.
Yeah, but we're going to see it. That you've seen it already in the preview. Oh, they have a flashback of him, of the parents being
gunned down. But you see, Mickey, that is actually essential. They need to retell it because that is his crux. That's his driving, burning passion.
Yes, his raison d'être, if you will.
Right.
That's right. If it wasn't for that night, there'd be no, and the bat itself, the monster that is, we were having, my brother and I, James, hey James, we're having a discussion about Alfred and his relationship to Batman. For those of you who don't know, the 6 or 7 people out there on the planet, Alfred Pennyworth is the butler to the Wayne family, and it's after the parents were murdered, basically raised Bruce from a child and supported him and took care of him. And now in his war against crime, he acts as confidant, he acts as mechanic, he acts as medic, he acts as basically everything that Bruce needs. It's the one man he can count on is Alfred Pennyworth.
Yeah, he's also the springboard and occasionally the moral compass as well.
Yes, yes, very much so. But Alfred, his relationship with Bruce is very interesting because here he is seeing this boy, this child that he raised, or he basically his father figure, and he's seeing this dichotomy now. He's seeing this boy become a quote-unquote monster, a creature of the night. There is Batman, the animated series, and Superman, they did a great job presenting that. There's a Mask of the Phantasm, which is an animated movie, the Batman animated movie, had this beautiful scene, and you guys know this, where Batman first puts on the cowl. He first puts on the cape and cowl, and Alfred is standing there looking at him, and his back is to Alfred. And he puts on the cape, and he throws the cowl on, and he turns around to look at Alfred. And Alfred, who has diapered that boy's bottom, says, "Oh, my God." I mean, he's taken aback. He's startled by what he sees before him, this pillar of black that moves through the Batcave. Then he becomes the Batman. He's something else. And that is huge.
Yes.
Yeah. And by the way, let me take this opportunity to plug one of my favorite currently DC TV shows, one called Gotham.
Mm-hmm.
And for the people who are not watching this, who are Batman fans, you absolutely must. It had a bit of a rough start, but now it is its own thing, and it is exceptional. The young Bruce Wayne, played by an actor named David Mazouz, he just nails it. He is amazing as young Bruce Wayne. He has the intensity. He's got that great look in his eye, handsome young man. But this last episode, this psychiatrist was coming to see him, and she was saying that she's so sorry for all the stuff that's happened since the murder of his parents, and he's been kidnapped, and that must have been horrific and terrifying and all this sort of stuff. Young Bruce Wayne is looking at her with this odd look on his face, and he said, I wasn't terrified. And she's like, what do you mean? I mean, anybody would be. He said, no, I wasn't. I was exhilarated. I've never felt more alive. And I'm like, oh, my God, I got goosebumps. I'm like, that look, young Batman. It is awesome. It is an amazing show. Riddler's fantastic character. Penguin is a fantastic character. And they are introducing, which some DC fans don't like, they are introducing pretty much all the villains. Every single villain that Batman eventually fights are appearing on the show. We're seeing their origins as well. And I don't mind that because, you know, these villains have to come from somewhere. They don't just appear for the first time when Batman is around. A guy just doesn't decide to, like, only exist in cold temperatures and put on a freezing suit. He's been around. He has a history. How did he become like this? What happened? What was his backstory? So that's what this show explores. If you love that, as we do, it's a fantastic show. If you don't like that, you may have mm-hmm. some issues with them introducing all of the rogues gallery of Batman.
But you know, Batman's obsession, and it is an obsession with fighting crime, it kind of plays into what we're about to see on the big screen with Batman versus Superman. Here's a man who dedicated his life to justice and fighting crime, and he sees, from what I understand, from the trailer show, from what I've heard, that Bruce Wayne witnesses the massive destruction of Metropolis. He happened to have been in Metropolis during the conclusion of Man of Steel, and watched Zod and Superman tear the city to pieces in their fight. And as a man who trusts no one except Alfred, literally trusts no one, he's thinking to himself, if this guy, he's supposed to be a good guy, but if for some reason he goes rogue, he's mind controlled, he decides he doesn't want to be good anymore, I'm the only guy who can stop him.
Right.
Somebody's got to stop him because that's some raw power that frightens me. Yeah. I got to put a handle on this.
And that's the spin they've taken in the comics. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the comics, it has long been established that although Batman does understand that Superman is a force for good and does believe that he is one of the noblest men on the planet, he also understands that shit happens. There are villains out there that mind control you, that take you over, that can do all kinds of things. And that kind of raw power turned against humanity would be terrifying.
Yeah.
So he has made sure that, hey, you know what? If that happens, God forbid, if that happens, I can stop them.
I got it.
I will tell you that concept of the two of them being opposite sides is, in the span of the two characters, fairly recent.
Mm-hmm.
It's mm-hmm. not until Man of Steel, the John Byrne's Man of Steel, that mm-hmm. he decides to clearly delineate the differences between the two characters. And thankfully, it's a difference they have maintained going forward ever since. So basically, Superman, you know, Superman's 50th anniversary, he got a wonderful makeover, and they reinvigorated the character. Prior to that, as early as the Superman radio show hit the airwaves, they got Batman on there to guest star. I'm really kind of surprised they didn't do it with the Fleischer cartoons at the time. But they were crossing over as quickly as they could. And they always managed to find a way to get along. And, you know, Robin always thought Superman was Kino Wow. And, you know, and then they were friends. And the world's finest comic book for years was always about the Batman-Superman team-up. But it wasn't really until the 80s when people started looking back at the origins of these characters and went, wait a minute, these guys are from two different sets. Part of what makes Batman so compelling is that there's a universal aspect to his origin, okay? We understand crime. We understand senseless tragedy. And you can set that at any time. You can set that at any place. At any point in civilization that you have a lot of people interacting and murders and looting and robbing, you can have Batman. And one of the reasons why Batman works as a template for other people to experiment with and try different versions of Batman is because that origin is very common to us. We understand tragedy and loss. Contrasting that with Superman, which of course I'll turn back over to you guys in a minute, Superman is a character that we remake every generation as our ideal. Superman is always better than us. He's our best self. Superman, it works best when he is a savior figure, a Christ figure, and that's, I think, part of his upbringing. It doesn't matter if Superman has the powers or not, he's still that guy. And he's that guy because of Ma and Pa Kent from Smallville, of course. Yeah. Superman's story is about him being a man who happens to be super, and Batman's story is about being more than a man symbolically. So, you know, that's just one of the ways in which these characters are contrasts.
I've often heard that, and it's very true, that, you know, Superman is who he is all the time. He pretends to be Clark Kent.
Yeah.
And Batman is who he is all the time. He pretends to be Bruce Wayne.
Right.
And it's just funny that you know, it is at the heart of who each of those characters are, and they are facing the same problem, but their approach is very different.
They have different philosophies on what it means to be a hero. Superman steps in and fixes things and saves people. Batman tries to fix it before it hurts more people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or Batman comes in when the deed has been done and justice must be served.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he hunts you down relentlessly.
Yes. And figures out your next move before you do it.
Right.
That's one of the things, his greatest achievements, his mind. Yes, he's physically just a human and he's got an amazing physicality. He's like one of the greatest athletes on the planet. But it's his very incredible mind, the world's greatest detective, who can figure out what you're going to do. And he's faced with some really absolute outrageous nightmares in Gotham City. I mean, your Two-Faces, your Jokers, your Riddlers, your Mr. Freezes, these are damaged humans for the most part. But he has to really figure them out and get underneath their skin. Now, when he's dealing with Superman, I think he has to approach this a little differently. Do you guys remember the first World's Finest team-up that in the Diniverse, or the Timverse that they did?
Yes.
And I loved that presentation of them. They eventually became allies, but they started out a little rocky, just like they usually do, where literally Superman puts his hand on Batman's shoulder to stop him from interrogating a thug, and Batman judo flips him.
Right.
And Superman's stunned. He's like, you gotta be kidding me.
Yeah.
Did this man just throw me? And he's like, come on. He zips up there, and he's in his face instantly because he's Superman going, hey, come on, man.
He even said, you know, they told me you were crazy. I didn't think you were stupid.
That's a great line. But then he instantly uses his X-ray vision, looks right through his cowl, sees it's Bruce Wayne, and Batman's response is, you cheated.
Yeah, you peaked.
You peaked, yeah.
You peaked.
And then later on that same night,
That's so good.
Superman comes back to his little apartment. he's Clark Kent again. He's sitting there. He's making his TV dinner, whatever he's doing. And suddenly he, because he's Superman, he looks out the window and, I don't know, mile away on a building with some high-powered binoculars looking straight in at him is Batman. And he's got a tracer on. He put a tracer on him during the fight and followed him home. And he was like, touche, yeah. I gotcha, gotcha, you know. So now, in that same night, they've just outplayed it, and the Superman's sitting there, and he's angry. He crushes the tracer in his hand, and you can see his anger building. But it's a great moment of those two sort of, you know, going through that initial meet. And
is this the same storyline that has Green Lantern suddenly finding out that Batman has no powers and freaks out?
No. Yeah, I saw that clip you shared on Facebook, Mickey. No, that's a great little movie. That's a great little scene. But that's a different one. This one came out. I think it was called World's Finest. There was a part one and a part two, and this was back during the height of the Batman the Animated Series and Superman the Animated Series.
And the gist of it was that the Joker is hired, or essentially hires himself out to Lex Luthor to kill the Man of Steel, because the Joker steals this jade dragon from a museum that just happens to be made entirely out of kryptonite. So he goes to Metropolis and says, "Hey, Lexio boy, I can rid your problem here. And in exchange, you don't buy a little tit for tat, you can take care of my flying rat problem."
And of course, Luther's response is, "You realize, of course, I can't be connected to any of this."
And even better, by the way, even better, he says, you can't even handle a maniac in a Halloween, a mere mortal in a Halloween costume. And Joker grabs him and pulls him close and says, "There's nothing mere about bat mortal
in here." They've done a great job of articulating the differences between the character. And also, when the writer's on point, they do a great job of explaining why in a group of superheroes that includes Green Lantern, The Flash, Wonder Woman, and Superman, you need Batman. I will, for those of you who are reading the comics, Grant Morrison's take on the Justice League was a good one. In the first series, they do a wonderful storyline where new heroes have come to Earth. And they're doing all this wonderful stuff, and every time the Justice League shows up, they somehow get it wrong, and they kind of mess up, and public opinion is starting to turn against them, and these guys are going crazy, and they don't, and none of them can figure it out. They're like, "I don't understand. Every time we show up, it just goes from bad to worse. What are we doing wrong?" And for two issues, they're agonizing over it, and then at the end of issue 3, from the background, just as it's reached a fever pitch, and the papers and the television have turned against the superheroes, Batman from the background says, "They're Martians." And he says, "What? They're white Martians." And they're like, "How do you know that?" You know, it's because he figured it out, you know. And so he's usually the smartest guy in the room. That's his real superpower, is his ability to outthink the other people.
Good news is, supposedly, this new Batman that we're getting is going to be that way. And so in his spinoff movies and in other things, he's actually going to be the detective.
I think, and I'll tell you right now, I didn't have a problem with Affleck the second they announced him, because I was around for everybody not liking Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
and then we all ate massive amounts of crow. Or bat, if you will. I don't like the taste of crow or bat, and so I decided to reserve judgment. And then the second they published a picture of him in the costume, and I went, "That looks exactly like the guy from the comics."
Mm-hmm,
I mean, I just stopped worrying, and now this last trailer that's come out.
Yes, I was going to say the last trailer that. Oh my God, he moves like that.
Wow. All right, anyway.
And the other thing about Ben Affleck is that he is actually real person tall, not actor tall. He's 6'2", I think, or 6'3", and so he's actually got a very imposing physical presence that does not require an awful lot of help. And so he's actually going to, I mean, and the thing about it is when you watch that, that fight scene where he's beating the hell out of everybody, it looks like a big guy, you know, doing that. And so that's what's, that's one of the things I'm really excited about is that,
They've gotten so much right about this combination. I was not the biggest fan of Man of Steel. There are parts of it that I enjoyed very much. But mainly what I was disappointed about was that at its heart, it was not a Superman movie.
Right.
They got Superman wrong. A lot of other stuff worked. But what they're doing with Batman, I wish the Christian Bale movies had been like this. I wish that this is the Batman that we had, although I'm a fan of the Christian Bale movies as well.
And you know who we've got writing this?
Who's what?
Who's the script writer for the new movie?
Batman vs. Superman movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, at least for the first one, it was the same guy that wrote the Batman Begins.
Yes,
it was,
and several other, Blade and a whole bunch of other things.
Right.
Goyer, David Goyer.
David Goyer. However,
his brother, right? I believe his brother shared writing credit.
He bowed out.
On Man of Steel.
No, I mean for this.
Oh, for Batman vs. Superman. So it's all David Goyer?
He bowed out, and Argo screenwriter Chris Terrio rewrote the script.
Okay.
And he bowed out due to time and commitment, not because there was a problem. Okay. So what we have is Goyer's ideas, which are often fantastic, and sometimes the execution gets a little bit, and we've got a master screenwriter coming in and rewriting his ideas.
Interesting. Yeah.
So,
I'd like to take that to Aaron's push there, and I think it's a nice segue. We've concentrated on the Dark Knight detective, for the most part. I'd like to switch camps now and jump over to the Kryptonian, and let's have Aaron, if you don't mind, give us a little origin briefly of Superman, what he means to you, and more importantly, how he reflects us in popular culture, what he means to Earth.
Right. Well, my first experience with Superman was the cartoons of the 70s. You know, the ones that had the Aquaman, Duel of the Seven Seas, the Filmation.
Yes, Ted Knight was the narrator.
Right. And so my very first introduction. I hadn't seen the black and white George Reeves TV show. But boy, I was a big fan of those 70s cartoons, and then comics. I would, of course, buy the comics and read the comics. I actually had the issue where Superman and Muhammad Ali box.
One of my favorites.
I owned that issue once upon a time. I also had the one where Superman and Spider-Man face off. But anyway, my first big, like when I really truly fell in love with Superman, was the Christopher Reeve movie Superman. And I believe that was in 76, 77,
78. 78. You will believe a man can fly.
Yes. And so from now on, I mean, from here on out, it doesn't matter who plays Superman, Christopher Reeve is Superman. I see Christopher Reeve in that costume, and that is Superman. Cable looks fantastic in the suit. But I always see him as like, that's an interesting version of Superman, is what I think when I see Cable.
And I like the idea that it's a version of Superman without perfect teeth.
Right.
They didn't cosmetically go in and change his teeth to make them perfect.
My love of Superman led me to discover the Max Fleischer movies, and I started watching those. I learned about the George Reeves TV shows, and I started watching those. And so, it just became... Superman suddenly was, as far as I could see, was everywhere. I mean, the comics...
What was it about Superman that you liked?
Well, aside, obviously, from the wish fulfillment, that who wouldn't want to have those powers, although I've said before, pray that I'd never get the powers of Superman, because I would be Zod.
good to know.
Yeah,
good
it
to
is.
Know.
Oh, yeah, God.
You heard it here, folks.
Yeah, pray that never happens. I was raised religious, although I'm not religious now. But I've always thought if there was an actual deity, a benevolent deity that walked amongst the people and interacted with them, it wouldn't be like Jesus or Buddha or Muhammad. It wouldn't be like that. He would be Superman. This deity would be Superman and would have that goodness and would always be helping people and would intervene as often as he could to help as many people as he could. And so that inherent goodness, my biggest disappointment walking out of Man of Steel is that I wasn't uplifted. I didn't feel good at the end of that movie. I felt relieved that more of the city had not been destroyed and more people hadn't been murdered. At the end of Superman with Christopher Reeve, I couldn't wait to see Superman again, to see him do his amazing feats and use his amazing powers to help millions and millions of people. I really was excited about seeing another one. With Man of Steel, I was like, oh gosh, I guess we could watch another one, but just think of all the damage that a new villain is going to do.
The lives.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's only one God, Aaron, and I'm pretty sure he doesn't dress like that.
And, well, and as Aaron was mentioning this, the first sure roll of thunder right. from the approaching storm overhead actually pealed out, you know, because Superman's like God.
I absolutely agree with that whole idea, the concept of this union archetype of being the ultimate man. The Superman really is what I cling to. Yes, he's got these superpowers of a god, but he will stop to rescue a kitten from a tree.
Right.
He's the guy who's going to float in front of a suicide jumper all night long and just be there with them and try to talk to them and not use his powers to force them. He's gonna talk to them. He's going to hold you. He's going to give you a hug. There was a comic book, and I don't even know where it's from. And Mark, you probably know this, but there was an issue where Superman was talking to a young child who lost his parents. And he was upset and crying, saying, "You didn't save them because maybe they had cancer or something." He was saying, "I can't save everyone. I cannot. I wish I could, but I can't. And it's okay to be sad, and it's okay to blame me. I can take it, you know?
Yeah.
I wish I could do something more for you." And that's just it. He loves us. This
right.
alien from another planet who has adopted us as his home planet, who proudly wears the clothes of a human being and walks among the dust and enjoys a hot dog and a hamburger and loves baseball and dogs and apple pie and mom. That guy, I think that's what I cling to. I love Man of All Seasons.
Yes.
Was a beautiful Tim Loeb, I think, that wrote that. Jeff Loeb, Examination of Superman in Smallville, of his life growing up and what made him who he is. And it's not his powers. Yes, it's his powers, obviously, but it's truly, he could be something hideous like Aaron would be Zod. Superman would be that, but he's not.
Right.
And he chooses to be a symbol. He wants to give us hope. He wants us to be good to one another and help one another. And that red and blue flying through the sky, zooming at something impossible from the cosmos that we're all terrified, thinking, well, that's it, we're dead. There's nothing that's going to save us now. I mean, these horrible creatures like Brainiac and Darkseid that have the machinations on our planet, and we just kind of go, well, that's it, game over, folks. And there he is, streaking through the sky, directly towards it, the Man of Steel in his blue and his red, Superman, and your heart swells, and you think, yes, yes!
Now, you could make an argument that part of the reason why he's able to maintain that for his entire life is because of his powers. He has no personal threat to himself. All of his fears are external. None of them are internal.
Well, this is something that they had to deal with early on. And of course, initially, when he appeared in comics, he was by far the most powerful guy around, but he was not the version that we have right now. He could only leap an eighth of a mile, and he was very tough, they described his invulnerability as nothing short of a bursting shell could penetrate his tough skin. Real quickly, they had to develop things to take him out, and Kryptonite actually came about from the radio.
Your show, yeah.
Yeah. So there's other things as well, and I can tell you that Superman is really only as good as the writer writing him, you know. And Mark Waid is one of the guys that really understands Superman. Over the years, there have been a number of people who've written some fantastic Superman stories that really stand the test of time. But at their most mundane, the Superman stories hinged on a trick or I hate to use a gotcha premise, but there's two things I want to mention real quick. One of them is the website Superman is a Dick. and it is the website that is basically nothing but a cover gallery showing all the different times that Lois tried to get Superman to marry her, and Superman would use his superpowers to weasel out from under it. Or Jimmy Olsen, you know, where he'd say, "Forget it, Jimmy, I'm tired of taking coming to rescue you." And Jimmy's, you know, his head's in quicksand going, "But Superman, I'm dying," you know, or whatever. And these are all examples of like these sort of middling Superman stories where people just didn't really know what to do with him. But but we do have a sort of a canon now, thanks largely to the revamp by John Byrne, who I think deserves a lot of credit for that.
I bought all those early issues.
Yeah.
I bought all of those early issues.
Yeah.
And I was really impressed. Who did the story, one of my favorites, and this is really, really helped to capture who and what Superman was, where he gets that alien flower on him.
Oh, so the man who has everything.
Yes. And he starts to, and he, the alien gives him the life he's always wanted, and he's back on Krypton with a wife and a son, and I mean, it's heartbreaking. It's a heartbreaking story.
That SOB who brought him that present was Mongol from
War World. That's right.
Yeah.
Intergalactic warrior.
Yep. Yeah, but I you know, that is the thing. That is the thing that they did not do in Man of Steel, is what Joseph basically said is, we are his family. I'm okay if the story had explored some feelings of alienation. How could he not have those once he finds out who he is and where he comes from? Feelings of wondering, do I fit in? Is this my home? But ultimately, the answers to those questions are provided in the same movie, and it's a resounding yes. This is your home. This is your family. You are one of us.
Right.
And I think that was the missing factor in Man of Steel. If they'd given us the angst and, I don't know, do I belong? Oh, I'm going to wander. Let me go to the North Pole. What does this all mean? Is my father really my father? And at the end of all that, he decides, he goes back and speaks to his mother, and he understands, this is my family.
Yeah.
This is my home. Yeah. This is where I belong.
Yeah, we're flawed. We're flawed, but we're worth saving.
Exactly. Yeah. And then that is the perfect time where he goes against his own people, who are trying to terraform the planet and recreate Krypton, because he's like, whatever Krypton was, I'm not part of it.
Yeah.
It is dead. It is a dead world. This is my home, and I'm not going to let you destroy it.
Right. Right.
And that part was missing. It was missing in Man of Steel. And
I have. I wrote at the time a very lengthy essay, probably 8,000 words on this very subject. I won't recount it for the podcast, but I will on the website do a link to it from Mark the Aging Hipster, because I think it merits this in talking about this. I just want to briefly say that, you know, part of the reason why Man of Steel didn't work for me was that this is not our Superman, Aaron, me and you, Joseph.
Yeah.
This is not our Superman. This is the Superman for... I don't want to say the millennials per se, but this is this, well, and I'll tell you why, because I think that's overly simplistic. This is definitely a post 9/11 Superman. The reason
and
why
see,
Superman,
I'm liking it, and I'm not a millennial, so.
Well, I know, fair enough, and it's not this is just sort of a broad categorization, and there are definitely people who have responded to this movie with a resounding cry of finally a Superman I can get behind. And that's okay.
Yeah, and from my standpoint, it's simply because he actually isn't necessarily the Boy Scout. He has to struggle to be the Boy Scout.
Right? Well,
and for me, that's a more compelling character.
Right, but that's why I say, I mean, I loved the angst stuff. I loved the scenes of him wandering and you know, when he's just letting himself float in the water and the whales swim by, and he's, I love all that. That's, you know, I'm thinking he should at some point have these feelings once he understands and realizes where he is from. But then come back around. You presented him with the dilemma. He's struggling through that dilemma.
Right.
And in the third act, it's wrapped up. And the conclusion he comes to is, no,
and
I am exactly,
maybe
I am exactly where I belong.
But.
Yeah, and by the way, I've heard that before. I've heard that Man of Steel was just the setup, right? It's part one. And as the movies progress, as we see him in this movie and as we see him in Justice League, that we will see that arc for Superman, where he becomes the very definitive champion of the Earth. I mean, more so than Batman, more so than Wonder Woman, more so than anybody. They all acknowledge it. If there is a one really good guy, it is Superman. That is him.
If there was a hero that I want my son to emulate, it is the Man of Steel.
Yeah.
And not because of his power, not because of his strength, not because of his invulnerability, because of his heart.
That's
his
benevolence,
He's the guy, and I wrote an essay about how I love Superman. It's much shorter than yours, Mark, but it's essentially saying, It's eight words. It essentially just says that's the guy. That's the guy that I want to meet. That's the guy I want to be like. He inspires me. Think right. of that kid in high school who was so good looking and was the captain of the team, and he had every reason to be elitist and snobbish. But you know what? He's going to sit with the nerds. He's going to talk to the geeks. He's going to reach out to everyone.
Yeah.
He's the firefighters running up the stairs at 9/11. He's
right.
that guy.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, and that's what makes Superman so special to me. Yeah. You mentioned the Amazon princess, so let's jump to her quickly.
Yep. This will be the first live action cinematic portrayal of Wonder Woman, and it's about damn time.
It is about damn time. But before then, and I will go on record as saying I am not a fan of the look of this Wonder Woman. I prefer my Amazons to be large and pulchritudinous. Thank you very much, Linda Carter. but I'm willing to give it a shot. I'm right. absolutely willing to give it a shot. I just, when I picture it, when I think Amazon, I want Linda Carter to be running toward me in slow motion. Right. That's what I want.
Yeah.
However, I know I'm not going to get that, so I'm going to be calm about it. I'm going to go watch Gail Gadot do her thing and understand that Wonder Woman is a mystical character. So it's possible her strength and her, you know, her invulnerability and her might, 5,000 years old is what they're making her, as the daughter who was created from stone or molded from clay and given life by the gods. Her mother, Hippolyta, the island that she was born and raised on, Themyscira, with all the other Amazons that lived there. She left Themyscira because she wanted to help mankind.
Right. And I think that is, I'm glad that they seem to be dealing with that. They seem to be embracing that. I've seen some footage. I don't know if it's from this movie or if it's from Wonder Woman.
It's from the standalone. It's from the standalone where she's throughout time, different time periods.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm real excited about that. I love Wonder Woman in World War II, and I think that's real important.
Oh, yeah. When she was running around punching Nazis in that one clip, I'm like, yay!
Yeah.
and one question for those of us who aren't experts here. What island is it?
Themyscira.
Okay.
The Greek island of the Amazon.
Okay.
Yes.
Not to be confused with mascara. Gotcha. Maybelline's going to have a heyday with this.
It's the whole Amazon. I'll tell you something else. This is something worth mentioning. If you guys really want to go down the internet rabbit hole, you should Google the origin of Wonder Woman. There's, in fact, a couple of books about it. William Moulton Marston is the guy who created Wonder Woman, and that guy is fascinating. He's fascinating in a way that sits on your Schadenfreude car crash reality TV gene. He's worth looking up. Okay, this is the guy, by the way, who also invented the lie detector test.
Yep.
All right.
And the lasso of truth.
Right. Exactly. There's another reason why she likes to tie people up. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
And it's totally worth investigating. Now, what they did with Wonder Woman. Is substantial because the early covers of Wonder Woman came out in 40 at the same time. Excuse me, I think 41. It came out right as we were entering World War II. So right away she joined the war effort, selling war bonds just like everybody else was, and she was fighting the Nazis pretty regularly. But almost as soon as they could, they started introducing this sort of domestic thread. And it was all about Wonder Woman getting Steve Trevor to marry her. Mm. And unfortunately, that ran for a while. It wasn't really until the 70s that she got co-opted and became a feminist icon. There was a wonderful period that just predates this where they tried to remake her as part of DC's relativism thing. This was when Green Arrow and Green Lantern were partners, and Green Arrow's ward, Speedy, got hooked on heroin.
His name was Speedy? No one saw that coming?
No one, exactly. But so Wonder Woman lost her powers and started wearing a white turtleneck pantsuit and palling around with a guy named I Ching. Let's pretend that wasn't a racist caricature, but she became sort of this judo chopping, take no prisoners. I don't have to have superpowers to be a Wonder Woman. And when Ms. Magazine was published, the first issue came out, Gloria Steinem put Wonder Woman on the cover. And that's really what got her moving forward in that direction. When they redid her back in 1986, which was part of the, or excuse me, 1987, which was part of the reorganization for DC Comics, they decided to scrap all of the romance with Steve Trevor stuff and focus on the Greek mythology and sort of married her to the Greek mythology. And in some ways she was for the DC universe going forward into the late 80s and early 90s, what Thor was to the Marvel universe in the 1960s. We're going to base this character on this type of mythology that's got a lot of stories and gods and heroes and monsters in it, and we're just going to spin those stories out of that. And that has worked really well for her, and I think it's going forward the way we need to be proceeding. So
is there a website for, like, Steve Trevor's a dick?
There is not, but there's plenty of Wonder Woman covers that deal with all the things that she does to try and get Steve to marry her, including at one point they're both turned into gorillas. One of my favorite episodes.
Of course.
Play
Jesus.
Me.
That's exactly what they, you're right, that's what they did with Thor. Walt Simonson came in and basically just went straight back to the myths and said, let's have Thor dealing with stories that come from the myths. And in my opinion, that was one of the most successful and popular runs of Thor.
Right.
And they have done exactly the same thing with Wonder Woman. I know a lot of this, by the way, not through the comics, but through the Justice League TV shows, where they brought in Ares and his love of war and made him an arch enemy of Wonder Woman, who you know, she's sort of the Athena character that, yes, you should know these disciplines, but war is terrible and this kind of thing. And they brought in Hades and Pluto. And I mean, it's amazing.
Hades.
I've learned so much about Greek myths from watching the cartoons. Okay. But
Hephaestus is the one who made all of her weapons, the forge of the gods.
Yeah, absolute perfect way to handle that character in the DC universe. And I was curious how much. I know in Thor and Marvel, it's well established that there is a realm called Asgard, and it's filled with these godlike beings called Asgardians, and Odin is real and Loki is real. But I don't know how far they'll take that in Justice League. When we see the Wonder Woman movie, is she going to be talking to Zeus? Is she going to be interacting with you know, Mercury?
Her origin itself kind of lends itself to that. I mean, she was given with the little statue that Hippolyta made for her baby girl was given life by the gods.
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of her origin.
So who's
I wonder if it'll be taken to the same level that Thor has taken the mythology
Gentlemen, if you don't mind, I'd like to focus with a pinpoint accuracy on Batman versus Superman. We've sort of covered some of these archetypes. We've introduced some of these ideas behind what makes these characters tick and why we love them so much. Hopefully you listening out there have gotten as excited as we are about this. But now we actually had the movie coming out. And I'd like to be a bit of a naysayer, only because it's my nature and not because I want this movie to fail. I want this movie to succeed. I want more. I want to see the DC heroes realized on screen to perfection. Unfortunately, as we've discussed, they've missed the boat on a couple of these things. Here are my main problems with Batman vs. Superman. Number one, Lex Luthor.
Junior.
I'm not a fan of the way they're portraying, or what I've seen so far, what they're portraying Lex Luthor. Now, I understand I've heard rumors that it's the son, that it's Lex's son, that it's not actually Lex Luthor.
It was apparently also in the comics.
Junior. Right. I'm not sure why they're going to open with that.
I don't either.
Right. Okay, so I have a problem with Jesse Eisenberg, so we'll see how that plays out. And I'm in the minority here, and I realize that, but I miss the trunks.
Mm.
I've never been a fan of removing the trunks, because I know for a fact Martha Kent would not let Clark Kent out of the house wearing nothing but tights. She'd be like, Clark Jerome Kent, you go upstairs and you put on your trunk. Mom, come on. No, you put on your trunks, mister. Everyone's going to be staring at your Super Bowl.
That's
get
right.
upstairs and put the
Stop trunks wearing on. Your underwear on the outside.
That's, no. It's because of the strongman when it was originally
I know,
it was created.
I know.
Okay, well, see, because that's the argument. People go, well, he's wearing his underwear outside his clothes. That's dumb. No, he's not.
No, I was
Shut
just
up.
Carrying the Ma Kent joke.
Oh, right. Oh, gosh. I miss that. I miss the iconic colors. I miss Superman in bright blue and red. I just do, and I'm sorry. I know I'm a nerd. But, I mean, he's so dark. Why is he so dark?
Yeah.
He looks so dark.
But, again, well, you know, like Mark said, this is Superman for a different generation.
Yes. And I'm trying to be open.
It's not the Superman you want. It's the Superman you deserve.
Well, oh, God.
Let me tell you something, and this I know for a fact. This will not be the last version of Superman we see either.
Zack Snyder even told the guy who's doing the music, he says the one thing to focus on is to do your version, because in 10 years, somebody else is going to be playing the Man of Steel, someone else is going to make another movie, and someone else is going to be doing the music. So bring what you've got to the table now.
I got to tell you, he is right, and I have I'm with you on this, Joseph. But I've sort of made my peace with it. I have, because I mean I can't
help me.
I can't change it anyways. Once again, I was not consulted.
Why not?
I don't get it. I was on the internet. I don't know. They knew where to find me, but I've made my peace with it because I think. This is probably a little bit unfair to say that even a broken clock is right twice a day, but they're going to get some stuff right. We all agree Affleck as Batman is going to be amazing. Mm-hmm. You know,
there is no doubt in my mind that that's one element they're going to just get absolutely correct.
Everything.
Yeah,
Batman's going to be fantastic.
Jeremy Irons as Alfred, from the little bit I've seen, I'm excited.
Yes, yeah. Jeremy.
And Affleck as Batman, he originally turned it down because he was like, I can't follow Christian Bale. I'm not that, the tone's wrong. And then Snyder explained to him what he wanted to do. You know, 20 years later, he's more disgruntled. He still needs some of the charisma, but all the stuff like that. And he went, okay, I'm on.
Yeah, and I like Gal Gadot or Gadot. I see Gadot, and I think, oh, we're waiting for her.
I do the same thing.
But I like her. I agree. She could probably be taller, but I think that's a quibble because
she could also just eat a cheeseburger.
She has muscle tone.
I think she's going to have the physicality needed to pull this off.
I think so too.
And that's really, you know, the point of Wonder Woman.
Is
not that she's tall, but that she's a warrior, and if she can convey that Amazon warrior. Persona. If she can make me think that she's as badass as Thor, I'm gonna be okay with that. You know.
Yeah. Right.
So I feel like going forward, you know, I'm basically finding the things to like rather than the things that are gonna upset me, because I've already written off the Superman portion of the film, which is sad to say. I know.
Okay. So here, let me jump in then. Here's where I think I had gone to the same place that you had, Mark, about Superman, and I'd written him off. But I've seen some things recently that have given me pause. So I believe that, I think it was Mickey that said that they're working on giving us the Superman that we wanted over a series of movies, rather the arc, rather than one movie, or even maybe two movies. But there are scenes, and by the way, herein follow spoilers. So, listeners, I am going to talk about some possible spoilers for Batman vs. Superman. If you wish to stop listening at this point, you may.
And strictly
if you don't
theory
care.
Spoilers.
Yes, the correct. Theory spoilers. If you do not care, then continue to listen. So, all right. In the trailer, we see Batman dressed in his little sort of commando, you know, Cold War kind of trench coat wearing guy, fighting a bunch of dudes. He gets captured. He's hung up on chains. We see some flying creatures. And then Superman lands, and the guys with the guns all bow to him. And Superman walks up and rips the mask off of him and stares at him. That is a nightmare.
Yes.
That Batman has. And what he is seeing is preparing the audience for the villain that will be revealed in the third movie, which will be Darkseid. What you are seeing is Apocalypse, or Apocalypse on Earth. Those are parademons that are flying around with the wings. They are Darkseid's parademons.
And everything with the orange tint is the nightmare.
Correct. And Superman, in this nightmare of Bruce Wayne's, has been set up as an emissary, a right-hand man of Darkseid, who is ruling over humanity in the name of Darkseid.
Interesting.
And so I think that Snyder is showing us that to give us this is the nightmare. This is what Bruce Wayne's worst possible scenario could be with Superman. It is true. It's realized. It's also what's driving his obsession with trying to combat Superman and confront Superman, even though Alfred is telling him in all the clips, he's not our enemy. Why are you going to war with him? What is wrong with you? So the reason I think that's in there is to show us that Batman, Bruce, will learn how good Superman truly is. Superman's going to do something over the course of the movie in their interactions together, perhaps even in their fight together, and Superman will show that he is this force for benevolence, this good, good man that Joseph has just very eloquently talked about. And that will convince Batman at that point will say, this is a good man. This is one of the best men I have ever met.
Yeah, and we've got two possibilities.
And then, the Justice League comes together. They fight the monster that is made from Zod's corpse. Gal Gadot jumps in. Gadot jumps in. And we have the beginning.
We're not going to see Starro? Starro.
Yeah, but I think that we need to see what Batman's worst fear is concerning Superman, and it goes back to the line of what's-his-face saying, the greatest lie is that power can be innocent, blah, 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 that kind of thing. The whole movie is building us up to think, well, they did destroy a lot of Metropolis. I mean, Superman is kind of out of place. He's unhinged, maybe, you know, and they're gonna reassure us, no, this is Superman. This is the man that would gladly sacrifice his life 100 times over to save the people of Earth.
And we've got two different ways that we can go with this. I mean, there are more than two, obviously, but two different theories would be, one is that Batman is setting them up, hitting them as hard as he can, hurting them, and if he's still willing to stand down and spare Bruce's life, you know, after all that pressure's put on him. The other is that Luther is arranging the whole thing.
Right.
Which ties into that line of, if man won't kill God, then the devil will. He's switching tactics at that point.
Interesting.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you the other footage that in the film, and again, spoilers possibly, I don't know, but from what I've seen, there's images of a Superman statues in Metropolis.
Yes, they've already, the memorial.
I think years have passed where you see Superman being honored, and there's a shot of all these people reaching out to touch him like a savior. And I know Superman is, like we talked about, a symbol, but I know in his heart he doesn't want that. No. He doesn't want to be worshipped. He doesn't want to be adored like a god.
Yeah.
But these people, gives them hope to touch him. Sure, go ahead and touch me. That's fine.
Well,
but then
did you also notice at the memorial?
Line. Yes. Yeah, okay. Yeah. But I mean, you know, it's also one of those things that you just, I don't know, to elevate him to that point of Superman wouldn't want that. I know he wouldn't want that.
Yeah.
He's like, you know what? No. I'm going to fly. No thanks needed. Don't thank me, Warden. We're all on the same team. Good night.
Right.
He's going to fly off. You know, he's done. I'm going to leave, you know. Good points, I think, there about what
And I think that's why he goes to talk to his mother, by the way, when the mother's saying, you don't owe them a thing, blah, blah. I think Superman is expressing his concern. It's like, I don't want to be this godlike figure that's worshipped. I think that is exactly what that scene is about.
Right.
But I want to help them. And the mother's saying, you don't owe them anything. Right. And I think at that point, again, God, knock on wood, if the writers were smart, I think that's when Superman will say, I owe them everything. Mm-hmm. You know, you're wrong, Mom, you're wrong. I am here. My very existence is solely for the protection of the people around me, of this world. And so, you know, again, when he makes that connection, when Batman makes that connection, when the audience understands, oh my gosh, that is Superman. That is a really, really good guy. And then Batman's like, all right, you know, come here, Boy Scout. Let's go beat up that monster.
Which I think may also be part of the reason they were filming it as an R, even though it wasn't going to be an R. Because they were dragging everything through the darkness so that when the light bloomed, they have a reason to work together.
So I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that what we will get is a Superman that I had wanted from in Man of Steel from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to see much more of that. And I think, like I said, they're going to nail Batman. I think they're going to do a very good job with Wonder Woman. I hear that Aquaman has such a small part that it's almost, you really get no sense of what or who that character is going to be.
Same thing with, get the fish stand.
So no, at the aquarium. He's saving Shamu. Again, a tiny, tiny scene with Flash, I believe. But those three, the Wonder Woman, Batman, and Superman. And by the way, I think Wonder Woman is going to be the bridge. I think Wonder Woman is going to help Batman to understand
how good
Superman is, and how much the world needs him.
Gosh, you're so, all upbeat people.
Hey, you know, again, and we, yes, our hopes may be dashed, and it may be the most dreadful thing ever.
I'm trying.
But when Snyder shines,
he shines really well. So we have... He didn't write this script, so cross fingers.
No, I understand what you're saying. I think he is a mediocre director. I think his best work was 300, and he has been on a downward slope ever since. But that's just me, and I mean, certainly I'm not alone, or I'm not the only one who feels that way. But I'm also not the.
Oh, you're definitely not the only one that feels that way.
But there are other people who love him, and that's cool.
He's not directing Justice League, correct?
I think he is.
Oh, he is? Oh, okay, yes. Never mind.
I
thought maybe for sure he would.
But remember, he also did the Dawn of the Dead remake, which turned out to be surprisingly good. So.
This was, I found the quote from Superman. And again, you know, I hope you guys are right. I hear what you're saying. You guys have put a better spin on it than I have. I want to be wrong about this because I want to participate in this film. I want to be as excited about it as everybody else is. But this was the thing that Jor-El says to Clark he says to Kal-El in the rocket ship as it's going to Earth. He says. They can be a great people, Kal-El. They wish to be. They only lack the light to show them the way. For this reason above all, their capacity for good, I have sent them you, my only son. I mean, come on, man! Yeah, you know the cue, right?
Yes. No, it's a fantastic. That's a fantastic thing to say.
And I have high hopes, and I also have terrible nightmares about this. But I want to be. I want to be exhilarated. I want to see my Superman on the screen, at least some portion of him. And I am so thrilled to see this Batman. Gentlemen, we're getting the last call here from the Lobot Lounge. So. I know. I hate it as well. But unfortunately, that is the case. I do want to say to those of you listening, as a personal note, this has been one of my favorite podcasts simply because I learned so much listening to my fellow nerds tonight. I know quite a bit. But, Mark, you have an encyclopedic knowledge of this stuff, which astonished me. Mickey, you always have a way to look at things that I have never considered. And Aaron, I think you have an amazing ability to weave a story. Obviously, you're a writer, but you have an amazing ability to weave things together that I wouldn't even considered. So I've enjoyed the hell out of this tonight.
Well, excellent.
Thank you all. Let's make a round.
By the way, so just as one final thing, and we'll probably do another podcast about superheroes on TV, but Marvel versus DC. But right now is sort of a little bit of a golden age for DC on television. I mentioned Gotham. I would urge people to watch Gotham. I would urge people to watch The Flash, which is fantastic.
That's excellent.
Supergirl is on the air and doing very well. We have Legends of Tomorrow.
Oh, hey, today was the day. Of course, you guys are going to hear this podcast later, but today was the day that they unveiled the poster for the Supergirl Flash crossover. Yes. That's going to happen in conjunction. It's going to happen around the same time as the movie. Comes out, and if you guys haven't seen the image online, you should totally seek it out because they have aped a very famous cover of Super. And it's just choice.
And by the way, and more. I think there's more shows being planned as well for DC. So this is very much a renaissance for superheroes on television.
Nope.
But again, we will probably do a future podcast.
Yeah, we should do a follow-up
specifically about
Marvel has the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Is there a similar term for DC? Is it the Cinematic DC Universe, the CDC?
I believe it's actually called the Warner Brothers TV movie clusterfuck.
I like the cinematic DC universe because it's like the Center for Disease Control. Yeah, I like that. I like that. So, gentlemen, let's go around towards the end of our night here in the Lobot Lounge. And if you had to place a bet, Vegas odds, Batman versus Superman. Mark Finn, who wins?
Batman wins because he's always got the ace in his sleeve, or in this case, the kryptonite lump. In his utility belt. So that's my, I'm calling it 3-1 in favor of Batman.
Mickey Finn?
Batman due to Superman just getting frustrated with everything and wandering off.
Nice. Aaron?
I'm going to say Superman, not because he would win the war, but because he would allow Batman to understand that Superman does not want to win in a war. He just wants to help people. Mm. And so Batman would basically surrender because Batman would say, I cannot fight this man.
Right.
Interesting.
Right. Here's how I picture it. I picture Batman saying, all right, Clark, that's it. Tomorrow, you and I, we're going down. Next morning to show up, Superman's ready, Batman's there, but he's starting to feel a little bad. He's weak, and he's like, I don't know what's wrong. I feel terrible. I feel so sick. I don't know what's going on. And Superman says, oh, that'd be the typhoid that I gave you last night when I flew into your room at the speed of light and injected you with it. What? That's not fair. You can't do that. Oh, wait, kryptonite's fair? Bruce, kryptonite's fair? Huh? That's what I want to see.
Nice.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are the Gentlemen Nerds. Thank you so much. Lobot Lounge is closing. We'll talk to you all next time. And remember, keep them flying.
Gentlemen Nerds is a production of Cloak & Dagger Studios, LLC. Music by Ben Gibbs. The sound editor is Michael Ashley Finn. Web design and cloakanddaggerstudios.com by Rustix Interactive. Promotional consideration by Wonder Twin Powers Ring Pops.
First Justice League, when they first banded together and battled something, it was Starro the Conqueror.
It was Starro the Conqueror.
And that was it 64? What year was it? I remember it was around my birthday, I think.
It was 63.
Yeah, it was around 63.
Pretty sure it was 63. But that was when they've been relaunching since 59. No, 61. 61 was Showcase with Flash. Mm-hmm. And so they had all these guys set up, and of course there's the apocryphal anecdote about Martin Goodman playing golf. What's his name from DC? And he's talking about he's about to fold up Marvel Comics, and he says, "Yeah, we just can't do anything with the superheroes." He goes, "Oh yeah, we're doing great with superheroes." And Goodman says, "I don't get it." He goes, "Yeah, we got a team book coming out. Justice League, it's doing well. Why aren't you guys doing anything like that?" And Goodman runs back to where they're literally moving. They've condensed filing cabinets, and they're moving desks and filing cabinets out of the Timely offices, or out of the Atlas offices. And he grabs Stan Lee, and he says, I need a superhero book by Monday. You've got the weekend." And so Stan grabbed Jack Kirby and said, "We got to work on something." And so that was literally how the Fantastic Four came about. And it's why initially they it was a half measure. You know, the Fantastic Four don't get costumes until like third issue. And initially there are four guys who are, it's basically Challengers of the Unknown, right?
Mm-hmm.
With superpowers. Right. And so that was the whole reason for being. But I believe that it was 1960 that they did that. So Flash was 58. And then they started redoing the other stuff, and so 60 was the first Justice League, Brave and Bold 28.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
With a giant starfish.
Yeah, I know.
I love Starro the Conqueror. I think it's the best.
Oh, my God.
If I could ever see that realized, it would be like a Harryhausen dream, this big undulating starfish with a single eye.
Oh my god!
I like the fact that I forget when they started doing it, but they came up with the idea that Starro has these little thralls that are basically other starfish that sit on your face.
Yeah.
Oh my god! That, you know what? I'm playing Batman Arkham Knight right now. And I swear that it is worth it just to hear the dialogue spoken by the goons as you're traveling through the city, and so I'm on the lookout for these kidnapped firemen, and there's these two thugs. They're just sitting there by the wharf. These two thugs, and he says, "What is it with this Riddler guy? He leaves all these riddles everywhere, all over the city." And the other guy says, "Well, he's not the only villain with that shtick." It's like, "What?" He goes, "Yeah, you ever heard of Clue Master?"
Yeah.
Like,
oh, my
what?
God. Clue
yeah.
Master.
Yeah, Clue Master. He doesn't leave riddles. He actually leaves clues. You've got to be freaking kidding me.
Let me, if that's a brilliant aside to drop in there. I kind of wish, it makes me think that at some point they're going to mention Kite Man and Clock King. So.
No, they do. They do. That's the thing. Here are the creators of this game having so much fun with just how ridiculous the Batman universe can get.
Yeah. And Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale remade Calendar Man and made him terrifying.
Like a serial killer.
Yeah.
Calendar.
I know. Laugh it up, Fuzzball, and then go read Batman Long Halloween.
No, I know. But that's the thing, is that anything that, even the most ridiculous, like there's a guy that they created for one of the new Batman animated shows, and his name was Professor Pig. And he was a villain, and he looked like a pig, and no one knew why, and it was a ridiculous concept. So they put this villain in the video game that I'm playing, and he's leaving these bodies, these corpses, strung up all around Gotham City. That he has clearly been surgically enhancing. He's been trying to fix their face.
Oh, he's Dr. Moreau.
And so you eventually find this guy, and he is basically a surgeon and plastic surgeon. He's done so much self plastic surgery that he looks like Donatello Versace.
Yeah.
And he's got these pursed lips. He only speaks like he's singing an opera. He wears a pig face.
Yeah, he's like a combination of Leatherface and Farmer Vincent from Motel Hell.
When I finally track this guy down, and I'm down there, and he's like, Batman, he's singing to you, "I will perfect you," and he's got this horrible pig face on. He's got a meat cleaver.
Who's done the voice for Professor Pig in the game? Dwight Schultz.
Oh, no way, of course.
From the what? From the
Murdoch from the
18th. Oh, my God.
Flashbacks.
Yeah, that's all he did. That's all he did. So.